Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to America Matters Radio. I am your host, Brian Hirsch, and joining me tonight, back again, is my co-host, Bill the Fixer Elmhorn. We have a very, very special New Year's Eve show for you tonight. But before, I would like to wish everybody out there, all the Patriots, a happy New Year, because this is going to be a big year for us. Welcome, Brother Bill.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to have Jake on with us tonight. He's got an amazing story. And I've been on many spaces he's hosted or he's been invited to and he's talked, and he just impresses me. He's very well-rounded, very knowledgeable on in many different topics. But tonight we've asked him to come and talk about his January 6th experience and, you know, how the media and the government have attacked him and painted him in a certain light. But really what happened on that day with him and his experience, what's happened since, and, you know, what's really going on behind the scenes that because of the mainstream media and censorship that I don't believe everybody's had a chance to hear it. So I'm really excited, Jake, to have you share your story. And Brian and I will go on mute and give the show to you.
Most definitely. Welcome,
Jake. Well, thank you. Yeah, happy New Year to you and all of your audience. It has been quite the wild ride, to say the least. It was maligned in the Mockingbird media. They created a straw man that they created a straw man so that they could malign my public image, so that they could malign and distort the narrative of January 6th, so that they could, in one way or another, control the narrative. They created a shock and awe campaign using my image for their agenda. And I think that the reason why they did that was because they needed a shocking image inside the building that they could then use to create the illusion that what happened outside the building also took place inside. There's obviously shocking images that took place or that were happening outside the building, you know, the violence, the chaos, et cetera. But those things didn't happen inside the building. However, my image that was shocking was used to kind of create this illusion that what took place outside also took place inside. Now, I do believe, after everything that it is that I've researched after my release from prison, that January 6th was a setup and it was a psyop that ensued afterward. So this kind of ties into the article I wrote for the Gateway Pundit. It's called it's an op-ed. It's exclusive op-ed by January 6th shaman Jacob Chantley. J6 was a deep state psyop, and I can prove it. So let's kind of explain what all that means, as I don't think this is anything that a lot of people are talking about, and I think it's something that everybody should be talking about. So let's start with the Operation Mockingbird Media dubbed me the QAnon shaman, and I have unraveled the tangled web of deceit that is the J6 narrative. In short, J6 was a deep state orchestrated event used to roll out a psychological operation, or a PSYOP, designed to target Trump and label his supporters as domestic terrorists. I will be delineating in detail why I believe this is true and how you can explain it to others. To start, we must understand what a PSYOP, or a psychological operation, is and how they are used to influence public opinion. A PSYOP is a government-created propaganda campaign designed to influence the psyche of an individual and the masses to influence the collective mind of a group or a nation. This is most easily done through using words and images which trigger instinctual responses in the subconscious mind. This creates an emotional response from the individual and the public that can be weaponized against the enemy of the government performing the PSYOP. Or it can be used to rally a people toward a specific government cause or goal. PSYOPs are centered around the weaponization of information and the strategic use of said weaponized information. Weaponizing information is done by combining information, which is true, with disinformation, which is false, to create a misinformation truth mixed with false information and create a misinformation narrative that is controlled by the government propaganda machine. Moreover, Obama passed the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act in 2012 that repealed the 1948 Smith-Mundt Act. This act of 2012 allowed the State Department to engage in propaganda campaigns on American soil to influence public opinion. So in other words, this 2012 act enabled the U.S. government to legally perpetrate psychological operations on the American people to strategically influence public opinion. Good examples for how this was strategically used would be the Russia collusion hoax during the 2016 election and afterward, the intentional suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop and the 51 intelligence agents that came out during the 2020 election and saying that it was Russian disinformation, and of course the J6 narrative as well. So PSYOPs are based on a strategy of infiltration, intelligence gathering, and the strategic use or suppression of said intelligence to craft a misinformation narrative that is controlled by the deep state to reach their goals. Now, how does this relate to January 6th? Let's start with infiltration. The FBI infiltrated the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers to gather intelligence and possibly strategically steer their operations, the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, toward an end that served the deep state's agenda. Much like what happened in the kidnapping of the Governor Gretchen Whitmer case in Michigan, it's highly likely that the deep state used their infiltrators in the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers to provoke them to going inside the Capitol or later to be used against them and set them up to use confidential informants in court who would go along with the government's agenda and their narrative. Also, Antifa and BLM admitted they infiltrated the crowd of Trump supporters to hijack the protest and turn it violent as a means of discrediting the MAGA movement. Furthermore, Sergei Dubinin, who the FBI told me was a Ukrainian spy during an interrogation, filmed the initial breach of the Capitol on J6 and has still not been arrested. Sergei Dubinin is connected to a media corporation out of Ukraine owned by Ukrainian oligarch Ihor Kolomoisky. This media corporation is called One Plus One Media. And Ray Epps and Nick Fuentes are the only people seen on camera encouraging people to go into the Capitol on J6. Now, Fuentes has not been arrested, and only after tremendous public outrage has Ray Epps been charged with a single misdemeanor. So this is the kind of infiltration that we're dealing with here. Now, let's talk about the strategic use of information and intelligence suppression. So President Trump offered 10,000 to 20,000 National Guard troops to guard the Capitol building on January 6th, and the offer was refused by Pelosi, by Mayor Bowser, and Mitch McConnell. Also, FBI Director Christopher Wray withheld vital intel about January 6th that was gathered by the FBI after infiltrating the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. And according to ex-Capitol Police Lieutenant Tarek Johnson, former Chief Intelligence Officer of the Capitol Police, Yogananda Pittman, withheld vital intelligence from ex-Capitol Police Chief Sund regarding the possibility of violence at the Capitol on January 6th. Now, shockingly, ex-Capitol Police Chief Sund said that the Pentagon also withheld vital intel regarding the presence of known terrorists in the crowd on January 6th. Moreover, ex-Capitol Police Chief Sund had his emergency powers revoked by the House and the Senate through a law passed shortly before January 6th, and he was denied the National Guard reinforcements that he asked for due to a quote-unquote lack of evidence, which seems to be intentionally suppressed, and the notion of quote-unquote bad optics. Now, ex-Capitol Police Lieutenant Tarek Johnson was pleading for over an hour to evacuate the congressman and was given a total radio silence by ex-Capitol Police Intelligence Officer Yogananda Pittman. Now, according to ex-Capitol Police Lieutenant Johnson, both Capitol Police Intelligence Officer Yogananda Pittman and the new Capitol Police Chief John Manger both signed non-disclosure agreements regarding the intelligence that they had before, during, and after January 6th. Now, that is how information has been collected and it has been strategically used or not used. Now, let's talk about the creation of the misinfo narrative and this, how this misinfo narrative is the psychological operation after the setup. So Operation Mockingbird is when the CIA infiltrated the major media outlets in the United States during the 60s and the 70s to control the narrative in the United States regarding the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement. The Smith-Mundt Modernization Act was the Smith-Mundt Act was rescinded by Obama in 2012, allowing the U.S. government to perpetuate psychological warfare operations and psyops and propaganda campaigns on the American public. Now, regarding J6, the Mockingbird media was in lockstep with the federal government and their narrative shortly after the events took place on January 6, calling it a quote-unquote insurrection, even though nobody's been charged with insurrection. So this is indicative that a psyop and a propaganda campaign or misinformation narrative was and is being conducted on the American people. The Mockingbird media was also caught lying on several occasions regarding the death of police officers at the Capitol on January 6th. And they also downplayed and lied about the death of nonviolent protesters on January 6th as well. Further evidence of, once again, a misinfo narrative. Now, the Mockingbird media also ended interviews with ex-Capitol Police Lieutenant Johnson once he started talking about Yogananda Pittman's suppression of intelligence. Capitol Police whistleblowers have also been severely disciplined and had their lives ruined for reporting on the corruption within the ranks of the Capitol Police. Ex-Capitol Police Lieutenant Johnson said that the Capitol Police have become an arm for the Democrat Party. This was proven when hundreds of leftist pro-Palestinian protesters stormed the Capitol building, and when the Capitol Police were asked why they were allowed to protest inside the building, they told reporters that they were told from their higher-ups to just let them protest. Now, the J6 committee also lied and doctored evidence in their public hearings, then destroyed all of their evidence to keep it from Trump's subpoena power after his arrest and being charged in Georgia. New evidence also shows that the Department of Justice doctored evidence and government agents lied under oath during trials, and it's alleged they also withheld evidence from defendants to ensure convictions. Now, finally, what are the goals of this setup and this psyop? The first goal was to create a shock and awe campaign in the United States, then use that shock and awe campaign to target and demonize a group, Trump supporters, and Donald Trump himself, thus creating more division in the United States and controlling the people through a misinformation narrative. The second goal was to use said demonization and division to impeach Trump and label Trump supporters as quote-unquote domestic terrorists. Consequently, this limited sympathy for Trump supporters as their constitutional rights were violated in mass, which is perfectly legal according to the Patriot Act, which says that if you're labeled as a domestic terrorist, you don't have any constitutional rights. The third goal was to imprison Trump supporters without constitutional due process. Like I said, due to the Patriot Act, the Department of Justice labeling Trump supporters domestic terrorists allows the government to waive their constitutional rights, allowing the government to surveil, arrest, detain, and imprison Trump supporters without due process, even arresting and charging people who were not in Washington, D.C. on January 6th for things as simple as internet posts that were deemed to be associated with January 6th, thus creating a chilling effect for all public dissent to the deep state's authoritarian rollout of centralized power. The fourth goal was to imprison Trump himself. This can be easily proven based on Proud Boys co-founder Enrique Tarrio's testimony regarding the plea deal that he was offered by the DOJ, where he was asked to lie about having connections to President Trump, creating the illusion that Trump had a hand in the events of January 6th, and in exchange, Tarrio would be given his freedom. He refused the plea deal and was given a 22-year sentence. And they actually are trying to appeal, the government's trying to appeal that sentence and trying to give him double that, by the way. The fifth goal was to use this psyop to centralize power by weaponizing federal executive power. Also, and all of this is so they could target political opponents and use a two-tier justice system to chill public dissent in the United States. Now, in conclusion, the government infiltrated underground groups. They influenced those groups and their plans. gathered information, intentionally suppressed that information, used the control of information to craft a misinformation narrative, thereby allowing the government to perpetuate a psychological operation and propaganda campaign on the American people to reach their goals of controlling the narrative, creating national division, imprisonment of their political opponents, chilling public dissent, centralizing power, weaponizing the executive branch, and the authoritarian rollout of a two-tier justice system based on corruption and political bias. Based on the information I have shared with you, I must ask you, the listener, do you think that J6 was a deep state setup and PSYOP or a quote-unquote violent insurrection? All of that being said, that is just a drop in the bucket of what actually happened on January 6th. There's a lot more stuff that would be revealed if simply Speaker Johnson had the cojones to release all of the January 6th footage. Once again, they've just released a drop in the bucket of the 44,000-hour plus amount of footage that they have. They've done this, the drop in the bucket, to give themselves political clout. They did it for political reasons. We, with the limited amount of footage that we've, you know, garnered, have come to discover that there was a peaceful demonstration going on, and then the Capitol Police started firing rubber bullets and tear gas and concussion grenades into an otherwise peaceful crowd. And this is what caused the mayhem. I said this in many interviews, is that after that took place is when all hell really broke loose. And that was when the barriers were breached, et cetera. And if you consider that a lot of the people on J6 were veterans, then something like, you know, gunshots, you know, tear gas, concussion grenades, all these things could very well trigger any sort of instinctual response to protect their life or the life of those around them. Especially if they have something like PTSD or something like that. So there needs to be a full release of all the January 6th footage. If we look at the way that Nancy Pelosi had a camera crew there, if we look into the fact that Nancy Pelosi's own daughter even said that I didn't do pretty much anything and I got 41 months, this is evidence that many of the people in the government know the truth about what actually happened. If we look at the way that the January 6th committee hired known Hollywood producers to create their show trial and their display that was aired on all the networks, the Mockingbird Media networks, and the way that they changed things in their evidence, the way that they crafted the narrative, it was all designed to go after Trump and his supporters. The way that they used my image is another example of that. They tried to say that I was a right-wing extremist or that I was a white supremacist and, you know, the white supremacist took over the Capitol. I'm not a right-wing extremist. I'm a libertarian. I don't have anything to do with the right wing. And I'm certainly not a white supremacist. They don't have any evidence for that whatsoever. I'm not a white supremacist at all. And they labeled me with the term QAnon shaman. Then they had the audacity to say that that's what I call myself, which is not true. It's not true at all. The term Q shaman was coined first by Alex Jones, I believe on January 8th, and then after I was arrested, the media started talking about QAnon shaman this, QAnon shaman that. And this is evidence for how all the media has to do is repeat something over and over and over and over again. And then people start using the labels that they, the Mockingbird Media, handed we, the people. And so this label of QAnon shaman is something that has been following me around for a while. It's how a lot of people know me. This ties into psychological operations, psy warfare. It's based in three things: neurolinguistic programming, that is the use of language to create neurological patterns in the brain, and for in particular in the subconscious portion of the brain, to control the way a person consciously perceives reality. And this is easily done through trigger words and trigger images that stimulate instinctual responses in the subconscious mind: fear of death, the desire to eat or the desire to procreate. This, we see neurolinguistic programming quite often in, say, advertising. This is why sex sells. This is why they use little jingles or why they use certain colors to stimulate hunger and stuff like that. It's also why the media sells outrage and fear, because it ends up causing these instinctual responses to be triggered, and thus, in the subconscious mind, these patterns are created, and that controls a person's conscious perception of reality. The second aspect of psi warfare is something called critical factor bypass. And that is basically neurolinguistic programming on a massive scale. By saturating all of the media outlets that are controlled by the Operation Mockingbird CIA media with the same message and doing it over and over and over and over again, the illusion is created that this message is somehow the truth, because the subconscious mind sees it everywhere and it assumes that it must be real if it's everywhere in the environment. Thus, the critical thinking portions, the conscious portions of the brain, are then bypassed, and the subconscious brain is programmed to control the way a person consciously perceives reality. Now, when you factor in neurolinguistic programming, which is in controlling an individual's mind through misinformation, when you factor in critical factor bypass, which is the controlling of the masses' minds through neurolinguistic programming, then you get something called the final aspect to psi warfare, which is mass formation hypnosis or mass formation psychosis, where 25% to 30% of the country believes that the propaganda that they are consuming is reality, and they become radicalized. These instinctual responses trigger emotions in them that radicalize them and cause them to scream the loudest and fight the hardest for this agenda that the government has for the people. And we saw the effects of mass formation in Nazi Germany. We saw it with the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia and the establishment of communism. We saw it in the Red Revolution in China and the establishment of the Chinese Communist Party. And we're seeing it here and now at home here in America through things like the race baiting, through things like sexual orientation and sexual identities, because there's a middle class in America, they couldn't use class warfare the way that they did in China or in Russia, or and they couldn't use like religious warfare the way that they did in Nazi Germany. So what they did in America is they went the race route and the sexual orientation route as a means of dividing people into these compartmentalized groups of warring tribes. So Americans are at each other's throats as opposed to standing unified as they did during the Civil Rights Movement against the tyrannical machine that we are dealing with both in D.C. and on a state and local level. So that's pretty much that. If you guys have anything that you'd like to ask, or if your audience has anything they'd like to ask, I'm open to it.
Absolutely. Hey, Jake, I really appreciate that, and you've really fine-tuned. I think the first time I heard you go through that, it's about 45 minutes. You've really kind of fine-tuned that, and I know you've got so much more to share. I guess one thing I just want to put out on the table and address is some people still just have a problem with the fact that you called yourself a shaman. You still call yourself a shaman. And let me add first that, you know, shamanism is a practice that transcends continents, cultures, religions, right? You will find shamans all over the world in different cultures underneath different religious systems, and it's a real practice. It's something that I've benefited from. It's something that I've practiced, not to the degree that you have. But I'd like to give you the opportunity to explain that so people can digest it and understand it and maybe break down the bias that they may have, you know, preconceived from, you know, what the world says.
Sure. Well, to start, I never called myself a shaman. I say I practiced shamanism. The media called me a shaman. So there's that. Now, when it comes to this idea of what is shamanism, it is actually the first religion. It is the root of all religions all over the planet. And I'll explain. So if you look at the foundational beliefs of shamanism, well, actually, let's start with the term shaman first. Shaman is a Mongolian or Siberian term, and it simply means the one who knows. So men and women both can be shaman. They can both be the one who knows. So it is not exclusive to a shaman. It's not quite like that, or medicine man. You can have it be male or female. And anthropologists have taken this term shaman, and they have used it to kind of paint every indigenous belief all over the planet that believes essentially in the spirit world and this idea of animism, or that everything has a soul or a spirit. They've painted them all with this term shaman or shamanism. Now, shamanism is the oldest religion in the world. As you said, it transcends continents, it transcends religions, and it's because it is the first religion. And in one way or another, all religions are rooted in shamanism. And I'll explain. So all shamanic cultures believe, number one, that there is a single unified field of conscious life force or energy that pervades all creation and all existence and impregnates all things with life. Number two, all shamanic cultures believe in the spirit world and the idea that there are positive and negative spirits in the spirit world. Number three, all shamanic cultures believe in the idea of prayer and meditation or trance states that allow them to get in touch and in tune with God, allow them to perceive the spirit world and ally themselves, for the most part, with positive or angelic spirits. Now, there are fractions of people that practice what could be considered evil or black shamanism or dark shamanism. But that is another subject for another time. Those people ally themselves with demonic spirits, but that's like black magic, Satanism stuff, and that is basically the weaponization of shamanic knowledge to enslave people, which I do not practice. Fourth, what all of these shamanic cultures also believe is the idea of the role of song and dance, singing and drumming to get into altered states of consciousness or trance states or as a form of prayer and to banish evil spirits from the ecosystem and to create things like healing, which is the fifth aspect that I would like to note, and that is all shamanic cultures believe in healing. And sixth, they all believe in the idea of sacraments or sacramental plants to ward off evil spirits or to create healing in the body or to be used as sacraments that allow the individual or the tribe to get in touch and in tune with the spirit world and with God. And lastly, they all believe in something that is called ordeals, which is basically like going through a prolonged process so as to avoid negative timeline. So the shaman will go through something or a group will go through something that is very difficult and arduous. And they do this to ensure that there's plenty of water, so there's no drought, so that there's plenty of food, no famine, so that the tribe is healthy and there's no disease, so that there's harmony and not warfare. Okay? So by doing these ordeals, they avoid the negative timelines and they create positive ones. The negative timelines are associated with evil demonic entities. The Middle Eastern religions called them jinn, and they called the angels genie. The Nordics called the evil entities the dark elves, and they called the angelic entities the white elves or the light elves. So this is something that's pervasive throughout all shamanic cultures in the entirety of the world. Now, if you look at all religions believe pretty much every single thing it is that the shamanic cultures believe. They all believe in God or a unifying force. They all believe in the spirit world. They all believe in prayer, meditation, or trance. They all believe in song and dance. They all believe in the idea of healing. They all believe in the idea of sacraments. And they all believe in the idea of going through, like, ordeals or going through things to create positive timelines. So I practice shamanism because it's the closest thing for me that is to objective reality. Anything else is pretty much dogma. And shamanism is largely based on personal experience. So it's not so much just about like what a book has said. It's more so about what we have experienced, what our direct experience is of the world as it exists for itself beyond subjectivity and into an objective view of reality. And so that's why I practice it. And my elaborate attire of the fur with the horns and the face paint is kind of taken from the Hiyoka shamanic tradition, where the Hiyoka dresses in elaborate fashions to shock the cognitive system of the people in the tribe. And then once that cognitive system has been shocked, once that has been delivered, then the shaman tells the people in the tribe, hey, this cultural paradigm that you're living in, this social construct, it's not reality. Reality is not subjective, it is objective, and this is what reality is. So this is almost like what we were saying earlier about neuro-linguistic programming and critical factor bypass and stuff. This is a shaman attempting to deliver a cognitive shock to the subconscious mind through dressing in elaborate fashion so that they can help the individual to rewire their subconscious brain, expand their conscious perception of reality beyond the five senses and beyond the cultural paradigm that they have been raised within.
Jake, absolutely. I live up here in Northwest Iowa. You should come up here and sit and talk with some of the Sioux shaman.
I would love that. Yeah, I unfortunately, I can't leave the state without PO approval, but once that has been lifted, I'd be more than happy.
I get that. But continue, please.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. It's exactly what you said, right? It's the base level that is in all world religions. It's not counter to Christianity. You know, I've heard you talk about faith in God and your belief in God, and I've heard you quote scripture, right? It's not – people have this perception that it's something else, right? It really is the base beliefs, and I'll just say knowledge, right? I personally believe that we are, you know, pre-wired – and pre-informed, right, to what real truth is, right? And over time, we get that truth challenged and we get, you know, corrupted, depending on what we let in our heads and what we believe. But it's really waking up to a universal knowledge and connection that we all have access to, but we're not all plugged into. I love the way you described it. It vibes with me.
Think about this, because I'm sure a lot of your audience is Christian. So Jesus brought people to a personal relationship with God, right? So he also taught people how to pray. He also healed people. He also cast out demons and evil spirits. He also went through ordeals like the 40 days, 40 nights in the desert and the Passion, which I do believe that he rose 3 days later. And he also did something that's common in shamanism, which I didn't delineate before, which is called soul retrieval, which is basically where the shaman will go into the spirit world when somebody is either thought to be dead or they didn't understand what comas were back then. They go into the spirit world and they find this person's spirit and they bring them back to their body and they revive them. And so we saw that with Lazarus. We also saw it with the little girl that was supposedly dead in her bed and Jesus told her to rise. So Jesus, in my opinion, is like the ultimate shaman. And I mold myself after Christ's example. I walk in Christ's footsteps. I don't consider myself a Christian because terrible things have been done in the name of Christianity for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And in all honesty, the modern Christian is not very much like Christ. So I don't put that label on myself because I think that it is it's not exactly who and what I believe. I don't accept a lot of the Christian dogma. I think that a lot of the Christian dogma was manufactured by the Catholic Church, which we see what an evil institution that church has not just become, but has always been. It's the remnants of the Roman Empire. And if they're censoring the truth today, whether it be about COVID or Hunter Biden's laptop or it be about the vax injured or whatever, if they're censoring all that information because it's true, what makes you think that they weren't censoring information that was true way back in the day of the Roman Empire that could very well destabilize the Roman Empire's grip over the minds of the people? They were censoring things a long time ago. It's called the Council of Nicaea. Okay, so the editing of the Bible, the King James Version, which a lot of Christians tout, like, look, King James was not a good person, okay? He was not a good man, and I don't think he had the Holy Spirit to help him discern what was real and what was fiction. I think that he had an agenda in his rewriting of the Bible. So I always go back to, okay, where does this text come from? If you look into the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Nag Hammadi Library, if you look into the cuneiform text from Sumer, the cuneiform text, the Sumerian Tablets of Creation mirror Genesis. Also, the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi Library, they tell a very, very different story than the four books of the apostles that have been chosen for the canon of the Bible. There's also 22 other gospels that were edited out of the New Testament that most people don't know about. There's also, believe it or not, there's text in the Tibetan, in the land of Tibet about Christ going to Tibet during the quote-unquote missing times of Christ, the missing life, the time of his life that's missing in the Bible, where it talks about in this Tibetan text that there was a Westerner named, I believe they said his name was Isra, which I think that like translate to something like being of light or something like that, that they talk about how this Westerner came to Tibet, learned the ways of enlightenment, and then went back to the West and was martyred and rose 3 days later and ascended. So this stuff, I mean, we could also get into the three kings or the three magi, the three wise men that visited Christ at his birth. And the fact that this is a reality, these men were magi. They were people that practiced the positive side, the light side of shamanism, that is essentially the understanding of reality from an objective perspective. So this is not antithetical to Christian fundamental beliefs. If you read some of these ancient texts, like the Nag Hammadi Library, the Dead Sea Scrolls, Christ talked about reincarnation. And if you look into the work of John Allegro, what you will find is he was an Aramaic scholar, a world-renowned Aramaic scholar for something like 20 years, until he wrote a book called The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, which basically he deciphered the Dead Sea Scrolls and came to the conclusion that Christ consumed psychedelic mushrooms, which if you look into the work of Greg Braden, who's also very, very intelligent and very well-learned and well-read and researched, he was saying that Christ was an Essene. The Essenes were like the lowest portion of the Hebrew caste system, and they were like desert-wandering nomadic hippies. And so, the notion that we understand everything about who Christ was in his life based on the canon given to us by the Roman Empire is ludicrous. The truth is below the surface, literally below the Catholic Church in their vault, and they're keeping it there because it would rock the very foundations of the Church's grip on the minds of over a billion Catholics.
Absolutely, and too many people don't know. They have had their minds and belief system formed by religious orders, right? And I don't care whether you're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, right? It's when religion steps in and the purpose is control of the masses. And then the political system, right? We can't let these crazy people of faith, you know, become a problem for us. And then, you know, and not, you know, what you said about the Essenes, right? People didn't understand that there was a whole sect of Judaism that accepted Christ, and they, in my belief system, they you know, God through them, you know, protected the whole word and protected it throughout history in the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? And those folks kind of folded into, you know, they'll say that they disappeared, right? You know, they didn't just disappear off the face of the earth. I think they just folded into Christianity. But, you know, the Bible, the modern Bible that we have, as you said, you know, was dictated, canonized by an emperor, right? Constantine. And, you know, you've got to question that, right? And, you know, Christians believe that, you know, God has protected his word no matter, you know, how many hands and how many interpretations and whatever. God has protected his core message, and it is the divine word of God. I don't disagree with that. But I believe that there is more than what has been published and allowed to be practiced, and that's what you will find in the Dead Sea Scrolls and in other ancient writings. And you need to open your mind up to, you know, and let your pride down to, you know, I don't know everything. And everything that I've been taught my entire life, as far as it is related to religion, might be wrong or tainted. Right, and yet you have to open up the mind and let the real knowledge come out. So, spot on with you there. Brian's having technical difficulties. I think he blew a breaker in his house, so he's fixing that, and he'll come back in. You're back. Oh, great. I was just going to segue into Jake's congressional run and give him a chance to tell us, you know, how that's going. You know what he wants. You know. Our audience and the world to know about, you know, what the policies and beliefs and what things are you going to tackle. I know you don't take donations, which is very admirable of you, but how can we, the greater audience that believe in you, help support that race?
Okay. So let's start with my campaign platform. I am running on four promises, four things that I will do, not just for the 8th Congressional District here in Arizona that I'm running in, but because the 8th Congressional District has a lot of the same core tenets and beliefs of what needs to happen to change as the rest of the American people, by representing the 8th Congressional District, I'm actually representing all the American people. The four things that I'm running on are, number one, a single bill voting law. That's the first thing that I'm going to propose. Secondly, a term limit amendment for congressmen and staff. Number three is a criminalization of lobbying. And number four is seven-figure fines, expulsion, and prosecution for all Congress members caught insider trading. And the beauty of this platform is that Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Green Party, independent voters alike can agree that this needs to be done. And evidence for this is that both Matt Gaetz, a Republican, and Representative out of California, Khanna, have actually touted three aspects of my campaign platform on the House floor, in particular, getting rid of insider trading, getting rid of lobbying, and term limits. They did this in sequential order, mind you, after I did my interview with Newsmax, which was national. After I did that interview, these things were finally proposed, at least on the House floor. Now, that being said, this is not just evidence that this is a bipartisan issue that people can agree on, but it's also evidence that these structural changes are popular and that these are things that need to happen, and that if somebody were to propose each of these individual ideas on the House floor, it would gain bipartisan support. Now, I am running as a libertarian. I'm not running as a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. And the reason for that is this. I think that the two-party system has done nothing but divide the American people and take everything from the American people in the process. And all we have gotten for being divided and robbed blind is more wars, more poverty, more taxes, more pollution, crisis after crisis after crisis after crisis, and less freedoms. So, you know, Gandhi said, if you cooperate with an evil system, you contribute to its evil. And I'm refusing to cooperate with this evil system that is robbing America blind and dividing us in the process. I'm also not taking any campaign donations because I believe big money is a big problem in American politics. And I want my campaign to be antithetical to everything that is wrong in American politics. So I have chosen to not just not take money from super PACs or political parties, but also to not take money from the American people because they need all the money they can get right now during this Bidenflation economy. Also, I'm not running smear campaigns on any of my opponents. I think that's also a problem in American politics. If you are the best candidate, then you don't need to smear your opponents. And I have no need to smear my opponents because I'm the best candidate. None of the people that are currently running for the 8th Congressional District here in Arizona understand the magnitude of the beast and the machine that they are facing. None of them fully understand what it is that it's going to take in order to disassemble the corrupt apparatus that is destroying our country and ruining our communities. So I've chosen to do things the way that I've done them because I want, like I said, my campaign to be the opposite of everything that's wrong in American politics. If you want to support my candidacy, then what you can do is go to my campaign website. It is shamanforcongress.com. That's shaman, S-H-A-M-A-N, 4, F-O-R, Congress, C-O-N-G-R-E-S-S.com. And you can see my campaign platform. You can also watch my interviews. You can also see how it is that you can help by sharing things on X or on Twitter. You can also see how you can help by spreading the word on things like other social media platforms. How far they will go, I don't know. But you can help me by spreading the word. You see, the three things that are necessary to win elections, it's not money, you guys. You don't need money to win elections. What you need is support, what you need is signatures to get on the ballot, and what you need is votes to get into office. And the best thing about all three of those things is they are free. And I'm all about freedom. I'm all about liberty. So I want my campaign to be one that is grassroots and for the people, by the people. I want my campaign to be one that is free, one that is not going to ask the American people for anything except their attention and their time, which they can give freely. I don't know about you guys, but I think that we are in this country, as far as politics and religion for that matter, we're kind of insane because we're doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. And
definition of insanity.
I refuse to be insane. Yeah, exactly. I refuse to be insane. You know, I'm going to do something different.
I agree with you. I look around sometimes and see what's on TV. I'm like, wait a minute. And I remember back when I was a little kid that there was a time for family time, and then there was a time the kids went to bed, and that was adult time. You had structure. You had discipline. You were taught things. I don't know what happened and where that all disappeared.
Well, it happened because of, now this is where we kind of get into psychological warfare again. Are you guys familiar with Yuri Bezmenov, the ex-KGB agent that defected to the United States in the 80s?
Yeah.
So he was talking about the four aspects of the Soviet Union's plan to destroy America from within. And these four aspects were, number one, was to infiltrate the education institutions, infiltrate the entertainment, infiltrate government and politics, and to demoralize, to use those infiltrators to demoralize a whole generation of American youth, and to get them to hate their country and want a communist system. And he said that was going to take anywhere from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a whole generation of American youth. Then you get into the next phase, which is destabilization, where the infiltrators and the demoralized generation begin to destabilize their own socioeconomic and geopolitical system. Now, this could be done through sowing seeds of doubt in American institutions. It can be done by overwhelming the system in the welfare state. There's a number of different ways of destabilizing the system. And infiltrators and the demoralized youth would then destabilize the American system. From this destabilization, you get into the third phase, which is crisis, which is where the destabilization begins to cause the infrastructure in the United States to collapse. So this is where we get into things like, you know, the housing collapse in 2008, or we get into things like the supply chain collapse, or the riots of 2020, or we get into things like people not knowing what bathroom to use, or the baby formula shortage, or the list goes on and on and on, the train derailments, et cetera. So these are the crises that are taking place. The wars, the endless wars, are another crisis. And then from those crises, during those crises, you'll have these infiltrators come in and claim that they are going to solve all of these crises if they are just given these high levels of government power. And then once they use these crises to move into the high levels of government power, that is when they begin to do the last phase, which is normalization. They begin to normalize the demoralizing propaganda. They begin to normalize the destabilization. They normalize the crisis. And then they install a communist government that basically promises everybody that they are going to solve all these problems that they themselves actually created in the first place. So this is the situation. This is what happened. When you say, I don't know what happened, we had structure, we had discipline. Well, what's happened is we've been demoralized. And in the process of being demoralized, destabilization, crisis, and normalization have unfolded afterward, and that's why we find the mess that we're in. So we need somebody that understands, not just, oh, yes, oh, I agree, our border needs to be secure, absolutely. Our elections need to be secure, and they have to have integrity, absolutely. But we have to understand, how did we even get to a place historically? How did we get to a place where we're at now, where our border is wide open, where we can't trust our elections, where our DOJ and FBI are weaponized against the American people, where the infrastructure itself is falling to pieces, where they're touting communism as some, or socialism as some kind of a solution. So big government is somehow a solution to the problems created by big government. We have to ask ourselves, how did we get there? And once we understand how we got here, then we can begin to craft some sort of a strategy to get ourselves out of it. And we can actually get out of it in much shorter of a time frame than it took to create these problems in the first place.
What's your strategy?
Amen.
Well, the strategy is a couple of things. Number one, we have to win the domain of the mind. The psychological warfare techniques, the psyops, the propaganda apparatus is designed to influence the mind first and foremost. So in order to understand the problem, we have to learn the definition of something called full spectrum dominance. It is a military term, and it means control of, number one, the psyche of the nation. So you, by doing things like psyops and propaganda campaigns, you control the psychological apparatus of the country's paradigm. Okay, so, and by infiltrating and controlling the mind, then from there, you are then able to control the land, you're able to control the seas, you're able to control the air and the airspace, you're able to control the subterranean, that's deep underground military bases, you're able to control the extraterrestrial, that's space and satellites. You're able to control technology, that's cell phone towers, televisions, radio, et cetera, social media. You're also able to control chemical and biological agents. You're able to control the medical apparatus. You're able to control agriculture and also the water supply. And you're also able to control the currency. So that is full spectrum dominance. And what we have now is less than 1% of the population through international corporations and investment firms like BlackRock or international banks like the Central Banking System and the IMF and the World Bank and the Bank of International Settlements. You essentially have less than 1% of the global population having full spectrum dominance over everything within our infrastructure in the United States, from our energy supply to, you know, our communication systems, to our agriculture, things like Monsanto, GMOs, et cetera, our medical apparatus, big pharma, the military and, you know, deep underground military bases, et cetera, et cetera. All of these things are a part of full spectrum dominance. The currency system, the Fed, our central banking system, allows less than 1% of the population to control every aspect of our system. And they do so through the bureaucracy, which basically constitutes a fourth branch of government. There's over 500 bureaucratic agencies that actually regulate, quote-unquote, regulate commerce in the United States, which means that they are, in effect, writing law. They're telling us what we can buy, what we can sell, what is legal, what is illegal. They also have their own regulation enforcement agents, which act like the executive arm for these bureaucratic agencies. So we have legislative through regulations. We have the law enforcement apparatus through the regulatory enforcement agents. And these bureaucracies also have their own administrative courts that are outside the federal court system, where you are basically found guilty and you must be proven innocent. Okay? So that's tyranny. That's essentially what the founding fathers were dealing with the crown, because the crown controlled all three aspects of checks and balance or of government, for which we created checks and balances. So the solution then is to understand how the system was formulated. So obviously getting rid of the Fed and debt-based currency is essential. Having some sort of a precious metal-backed currency, which is totally feasible. They've got gold backs in Utah and Wyoming and all sorts of states around the country. There's all sorts of silver coins or gold coins that could be minted. So we could have a precious metal-backed currency. I also think we should have something like cryptocurrency and a barter system for our economic system. For our, that way, in case one system collapses, we have the other ones as like a safety net to fall back on. But it's also about creating a new infrastructure, creating a parallel economy, because we're not going to get anywhere by beating our heads against a wall. And the full spectrum dominant system is a wall. And international corporations, investment firms like BlackRock, the international banking cartels, they control that wall. And anybody that tries to go over it or under it or whatever, is the lawfare system is used to go after them. So what we have to do is we have to create a parallel. Yes.
If you try to go over it or under it, you get crushed by it.
Precisely. So what we have to do is create a system that makes the old one obsolete. We have to kind of look at it like the horse and buggy industry versus the automobile industry. The automobile industry did not seek to destroy the horse and buggy industry. They weren't trying to fight it. What they did is they created better and better automobiles at cheaper and cheaper prices, and then lo and behold, it was cheaper and more efficient to get a automobile than it was to have a horse and buggy. And so then eventually the horse and buggy industry just was phased out. It was rendered obsolete. So we need to create a better system, both financial. We also need to create a better system that is one that is based in a different form of energy. This is where we get into Tesla towers and Nikola Tesla's infinite free clean wireless energy towers that he created in the early 1900s. This is also where we get into how these things could be used as a new communication system, so we don't need to use the satellites, the cell phone towers, the radio towers, et cetera. If we don't need to use the wires to transmit our electricity or our communications. They can also be used in agriculture, so you can use certain frequencies from these Tesla towers to increase agriculture and increase the growth of plants so that we don't need genetically modified organisms. We can also use them to get rid of pests so that we don't need pesticides. We can also use these towers to clean up all of the messes, all the chemicals that are destroying ecosystems and our bodies. In conjunction with things like bioremediating fungi, plants, and bioremediating microbiological organisms called archaea. And you can use these frequencies in conjunction with these organisms so that you create a frequency that allow these organisms to grow rapidly and consume these toxic chemicals that are destroying the ecosystem and causing disease. You can also, when you factor in the understanding of energy, frequency, and vibration that Tesla understood, you can use these principles in medicine as well. So Tesla was working with Dr. Rife, that's Royal Raymond Rife, R-I-F-E. Dr. Royal Raymond Rife and Tesla were working together where they understood that certain invasive microorganisms, whether they be cancer or bacteria or viruses or funguses or parasites or what have you, they all emit and operate based on a certain frequency. And similar to how if you match the frequency of a wine glass, you can destroy that wine glass with frequency and vibration, you can also destroy unhealthy tissue, cancer, viruses, etc., through matching their frequency and destroying them without doing any damage to healthy human tissue. You can also use frequency to reverse the oxidation process of the cell, so you can actually reverse the aging process as well. So we would literally have a whole new infrastructure, a whole new medical infrastructure, a whole new communication infrastructure, a whole new energy infrastructure, a whole new agricultural infrastructure, a whole new currency infrastructure. And this is the parallel economy that needs to be created. Now, this is the beautiful part about all this, is that that doesn't mean that we have to destroy the old economy. Rather, we need the old economy to kind of act like scaffolding so that we can build this new parallel economy outside of the major cities. And within these smaller cities that are outside the major cities, we would then implement the founding fathers' vision for a three-branch government of checks and balances of self-ruling people. And this new system would be based on infinite free, clean, wireless electricity. So anytime you introduce a new source of energy to the economy booms. So anybody that says if you introduce these technologies, then the economy is going to collapse, they don't know what they're talking about. What we need to do is create two economies. You have the petrodollar, the debt-based currency economy, the major cities, and then you have this new parallel economy based on this new form of currency, new form of energy, new form of communication, new form of medicine, new form of agriculture. And you end up using the old system as scaffolding for the new. And eventually what's going to happen is that this old system will fall away, like scaffolding outside of a building. Eventually it will be obsolete. And the new system will be symbiotic with the environment. It'll be symbiotic with human beings. Because in the presence of infinite resources, there's no need for war. Most of our wars are fought over resources. So in the presence of infinite resources, there's no need for war. In the presence of massive amounts of food, there's no need for hunger. There's no need for fighting over resources, or there's no famine. You can also use Tesla towers and frequency to purify contaminated water supplies. You can also use Tesla towers and frequencies to manipulate the weather without the need for stratospheric aerosol injections, or chemtrails for the layman, and Doppler radar facilities being used to use electromagnetic frequencies that steer these chemtrail particles to manipulate the weather. So we can literally transform our planet into a beautiful green Garden of Eden if we would just work together. I think that what most people don't really understand is how easily possible this is, especially when we factor in the final ingredient of this parallel economy. And that would be the three patents that Donald Trump released in 2020. He declassified these patents, okay? And the patents were filed by a man named Salvador Pius. And Salvador Pius just so happens to mean savior of our nation, by the way. Salvador Pius filed for these patents with the Navy, and Donald Trump declassified them. The three patents are as follows. Number one, a zero-point energy engine. So for the layman, what that means is that basically because everything all around us is made up of energy at a certain subatomic quantum foam vacuum level, if you're able to harness energy from that zero-point space, then you have infinite, clean, free energy. So Salvador Pius filed this patent for a zero-point energy engine, which works. It does work. Alongside what is called a room temperature superconductor. That's the second patent, and room temperature superconductor allows the zero-point energy engine to function without overheating. And then lastly, the TR-3B. It is a triangular-shaped craft that uses what is called inertia propulsion, or for the layman, anti-gravity propulsion, to fly through the air and also go into the ocean. We're talking like this thing can be a submersible craft as well, because it has like this little bubble around it that basically keeps it from being affected by G-force and keeps it isolated from the elements. So we literally have the capability of not just transforming all of the aspects to our infrastructure that I just explained, but we also have the ability to transform our transportation infrastructure and make it not only safer, but faster and more efficient, which means that prices are going to go down. Because the only reason why things are as expensive as they are is because it costs a certain amount of money to ship goods and services all across the country and all across the globe. That you need a certain amount of fuel to get across the ocean, or a certain amount of fuel for a trucker to get across the country. But if you end up making that price zero, if you have a zero-point energy engine with infinite energy, and you're able to go from LA to DC in the snap of a finger, then lo and behold, you are going to have a much lower bill when it comes to the transportation of food, water, or services. So this is actually will allow our economy to be much more stable, which will allow something like a precious metal-backed currency to be pervasive throughout the economy, because the numbers that we're dealing with are going to be so much lower. Instead of buying billions of dollars a day in fuel or oil or whatever, you're talking about much lower numbers, which means that something like a precious metal-backed currency could be used and would remain stable. And final point, the TR-3B also has the capability of going into outer space. We could literally start doing things like colonizing the moon or colonizing Mars. We could begin to mine asteroid fields in the asteroid belt between Jupiter and Mars. And we could stop mining for metals and stuff like that here on the planet and destroying ecosystems. So what that is the solution. And it's so on another level that most of the time when I talk about this stuff, people kind of their eyes gloss over it, and they're like, let's talk about something else that I understand and know about. But
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I'm sure I'm talking to the right audience. Don't get the wrong idea. I'm not trying to insult your intelligence. I'm just saying that for the people that are rolling their eyes in the audience, I promise you, this is possible. This is reality. This is what these less than 1%ers who created the full spectrum dominant system, this is what they've been keeping from us through non-disclosure agreements and security clearances. This is what the kind of research they've been doing in the deep underground military bases that has remained classified. These things are called disruptive patents or disruptive technologies, because they would disrupt the monopolies that these corporations have over our resources, our labor, and our currencies.
And I guess the question I have is, like, first, the belief I have is we need at least 10 more Elon Musk, right? People that have their minds open, have money, are willing to do the right thing, for the country, for the world, in Elon's case, for the universe, right? my first question is, why is Elon not? Because he's got a desire to colonize Mars. And he's got the funds, and he's got the company. You know, why don't you think he's grasped onto this anti-gravity technology?
Think about this, because I've asked myself the exact same question. Elon Musk has several different corporations that he owns and controls in one way or another. Number one is SpaceX. Rockets, right? Number two is Starlink, satellites. Number three is boring, the tunnel boring machines and the creation of underground facilities. Number four, he has Twitter or X communication. Number five, he has Tesla, which is based on lithium batteries, okay? And number six, he has Neuralink, which is basically transhumanism plugging chips into people's brains. Now, what most of these things have in common is government subsidies. He has to have security clearances, you guys, in order to launch rockets into space, in order to put satellites in orbit, in order to have something like Twitter, in order to have something like Boring. You're going to have security clearances, which means that he has a very deep stake in the established order of things. And these technologies would be disruptive to that order. And look, I am very appreciative for what he's done for X and Twitter. And the way that, you know, he's instated all sorts of people and gotten rid of the bots, the way that he's, you know, basically touted as a free speech platform. But I'm going to tell you, hiring somebody that is from the WEF to be your CEO is antithetical to free speech. She said herself, freedom of speech is not equal reach. So
I'll have to
agree with you there. Yeah. Yeah, if you see my pinned
tweet,
people are getting
censored on Twitter.
People are still getting censored on Twitter.
Yes, exactly. And if the World Economic Forum is seeking to essentially control all of our resources and labor, and this is something they've actually come right out and said recently about how they're trying to move away from the climate crisis narrative and move toward a water control and water shortage narrative so they can control our fresh water supplies, we're really beginning to see who these people are and what they want to do. Because I just told you how we could have an abundance of clean water. I just told you how we could easily create mass amounts of food. But these people, they don't want to do that. What they want to do is they want to maintain their full spectrum dominant system where they're in control of all of these things, and they dictate from the top down who is in control of what and how much resources people are allowed to have. And this is also why they're trying to get rid of gas stoves. This is why they're trying to have people with these, you know, smart houses and smart homes and stuff. So if at any point they decide to shut off your electricity, they can do that with the push of a button.
Yeah, and obviously it's money, right? And it's always been the traditional problem. You know, you come up with a gas-free engine of some sort, and then the auto and gas companies come in, buy the patent, or kill you, right? And that thing just disappears. But these three patents have been released. They're available, and that's the challenge we have, is, one, you need somebody with the power and the resources to, you know, take and run with that. Two, you're going to battle those industries, all those industries. No matter what good it is for all of humanity, when you've got that much power, that will lose their entire business model and revenue stream. When you have free energy and free transportation and free food, right? The battle we have to fight is tremendous.
But even if it's just extremely cheap, then it undercuts their economy, and it undercuts their bottom line.
And their control over it.
And their control over it. Correct. So this is why I think Elon Musk hasn't gone that far. And if we look at Twitter and or X and what's happened and how it is that people are still being censored, how it is that freedom of speech does not mean freedom to equal reach, then we're starting to see how there might be a certain level of controlled opposition here. And that the illusion of freedom of speech may be being maintained so that it's kind of like a pressure release valve so that the public doesn't get so angry that they start to really buck the system. And just to let you know, you guys, there's 5,000 to 6,000 disruptive patents, 5,000 to 6,000 classified patents that are being held by the government. And yet things like an engine that runs based on water is a part of all of that, in that, like, what happens is that this somebody invents something, and then somebody shows up knocking on the door wearing a suit and tie with a briefcase in one hand and a firearm strapped to their hip, and they tell them, you can either have this suitcase, this briefcase full of money, or you can have what's here on my hip. But either way, that patent right there is coming with me. And there's 5,000 to 6,000 of these patents that are being classified. So we're just talking about three patents that Donald Trump released in 2020. Imagine what would happen if you released the other 5,000 to 6,000. And here's the
Absolutely.
Best part. And this is something a lot of
people thought in the back of my head. All this stuff that we see at Area 51 and all these other secret bases, what's to say those aren't just patents that the government took?
You mean like interdimensional or extraterrestrial craft?
Like the craft that you were talking about.
Is that what you mean?
Triangular craft.
Yeah, yeah. That's the kind of stuff they have in these places. But I'm going to tell you right now. They have stuff that is so much better than that. That's the reason why the TR-3B is like, it's like scraps from the table, bro. It's like scraps from the table. These people have things, they have something called tachyon engines. Tachyons are quantum particles that move backward through space and time. They travel so fast that the lowest speed that they go is the speed of light. So they have engines that are tachyon engines. We're talking like warp speed, Mr. Zulu.
Well, look at
that's
how long they've
the
been
kind
working
of
on
had...
quantum computers.
Oh, yeah, dude, they've had these quantum computers for some time. Just like with the modern-day AI, the stuff that we're dealing with that's drawing us pictures or giving us, you know, essays that we don't have to write, dude, that scraps from the table. They've got AI that is fully conscious and regulating our economy. They're regulating – it's regulating our social media. It's patching our phone calls. I mean, AI is actually what most people don't realize – it's actually an existential, parasitic, invasive species threat that is very real, and it is knocking on our front door, and we have some of these less than 1%ers inviting it in so that they can use it to control humanity.
No
it's
different
than
a form
good.
Of Terminator in the real life.
Yes, we're talking Skynet. Yes,
Jake.
That is correct.
Jake. Hey, Jake, I would like to dominate all your time, but we actually do have a caller. Brian, if you
cool.
can let them in, let's see what they have to say.
Yes, we have a caller,
Sounds
407
good.
From Orlando. You're on the line.
Caller,
yeah,
can you introduce Can you actually, can you introduce yourself and let us know what your question is for Jake? Thanks.
Okay, I got a comment I think we'll add to you. My name's Nathan in Orlando. What woke me up was you guys when you were talking about the water issue. I don't know if you're aware of this, but in Arizona, the Saudi Arabia owns the water rights, and if you live out there right now, water is like gold because they're taking the water and sending it back to Saudi Arabia because, you know, they're in a desert. And they're using it for their gardens and whatever else they want to use it for. But you're paying through the nose for this water. If you're an American, your tax dollars is not only keeps it up, but you got to pay through the nose for it. I'm going to tell you something y'all need to look into. Executive Order 12803, that was George Daddy Bush in 1992, gave other countries the right to buy up infrastructure. And one of the biggest concerns I got is right now they're buying up large amounts of property around the military bases, which means if we go to war, the war's over before it gets started. And plus we see how well these people are at digging tunnels up under something to ambush it. I think we can say pretty much this one world thing is coming down to its last, you know, phases or phrases, you know. I'm listening to you guys, and, you know, you sound like, in one sense, this sounds like something we would see in a movie, but we do know that it's real and we're there. But there's a lot more to it, too, and that is, you know, the two-party system has given basically this stuff away, you know, to other countries. I know that.
So, if you could form that into a question for Jake, like what is your question for Jake about that?
My question is, go look at 12803. Executive Order 12803.
Let me start by saying, I understand what you're saying, but let me start because I think that, first of all, you're not wrong when you're talking about the New World Order agenda. You look at things like Agenda 2030 and how they're trying to accelerate it to Agenda 2025. It started out as Agenda 21, the UN's plan to basically control our lives internationally. And you look at people like George H.W. Bush talking about a new world order, Obama talking about a new world order and surrendering our rights to an all-powerful international sovereign. You know, I understand what you're saying, but here's something that I want to challenge all that with. Because I'm, as a shamanic practitioner, I'm spiritual first and foremost. And what we're dealing with here is less than 1% of the population. We outnumber them millions to one. All right. Now, this less than 1% of the population has created an infrastructure that has allowed them to control the minds of the populations and therefore the mental paradigm that they live within. They're controlling our thoughts. They're controlling our emotions through things like legislation and through things like propaganda and psychological operations. Now, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the videos of like the grains of rice or salt that are on like a speaker or a metal plate, and then they channel sound through it, and then it ends up creating a pattern. And the higher the frequency, the more complex the pattern. The lower the frequency, the less complex the pattern. And that is called cymatics. So throughout history, each different age that we go through, which is an age is like 2,160 years, each of the different ages that we go through is like a different cymatic pattern of energy on the planet that is manifesting, these patterns are manifesting as different forms of global civilizations. And if you notice in cymatics, when you transition from one pattern to another, there is a short period of time, a short duration in which there is no discernible pattern and there appears to be chaos. And then all of a sudden, boom, a new pattern forms from the old. Now, we are currently in a situation, hold on one sec, we are currently in a situation where we are transitioning from one pattern to another, from the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius. And the social systems, the thought patterns, the economic systems, the political systems, the currency systems, all of these things are undergoing a radical transformation. And what these less than 1%ers are intending to do is use the systems that they created in the age of Pisces to attempt to control things during the age of Aquarius. But we are being controlled and governed by forces much larger than less than 1% of the population. God is in control here. And I think that what we're witnessing as we go through this apocalypse or this lifting of the veil is the understanding that our socioeconomic and geopolitical systems are so heavily infiltrated and corrupted that we have to create something new, otherwise we're not going to survive. And our thought patterns, our emotional patterns are changing. Therefore, our behavior is changing. Our social, economic, geopolitical systems are changing as a mirror of that internal change within us. So I think that all of the censorship, I think all of the wars, I think all of the propaganda, it's all defense mechanisms. These are defensive measures because these people know that they are losing. They are just creating the illusion that they are winning because it's our psyche that they must first win in order to maintain full spectrum dominance.
I got one last thought I'd like to throw out there to see if you think this would fit in. You know, we're in a two-party paradigm, which is not in the Constitution. There is no two-party system. There's no electoral college or anything like that. But if you go back to our Civil War, and we're almost, I think, in some ways back at that point again. At the Civil War, when Lincoln won, it was over. It was over for the Whig Party. And the Whig Party was a party that the king from England sent over here because they lost us militarily, so they wanted to take us back politically. And whenever the small Republican Party won, the Whig Party disbanded, and the Whig Party, they didn't have enough members to be in all the states, but they won, and with a civilian for the leader of the party. Once they won, the Whig Party disbanded, and the majority of them filled up the Republican Party, so we're back at our next derail. And I think that Trump is going to be that he might be that Lincoln that takes the issue of the day and leads us on, you know. But that you see how we got trapped in our mind.
So let me
pause
you there. Yeah, let me just pause you there for a second, because I think it's bigger than Trump, right? As much as I support Trump, right? What Jake was saying, it's bigger than that. And I think one of the biggest hurdles we have to overcome is that the enemy wants to fill our hearts and our minds with fear, right? Fear of, you know, and I hear this over and over, even from, you know, people on my side of the aisle, on my posts, right, that there's nothing we can do. You know, this new world order is taking over. It's so embedded. The voting machines are corrupt. We can't win, right? And I constantly try to challenge their minds to think positively. When you have fear, when you have intimidation, you know, none of those things are good, and they're designed to disable and cripple us, right? There's a bigger force that is, and I don't care what religion you believe in or what culture you come from, there is a story, a prophecy that says, yes, it's going to get to a brink, and then, right, and then good's going to prevail. And that's what we have to hold on to, and we have to be, faithful to, just keeping our minds positive, not fighting and dividing among ourselves, right? And looking for the good and the connection, and hoping for. And that doesn't mean just sit back and wait for some savior to come and, you know, fix it all for us, right? We just like Jake's doing. Yeah, just like Jake's doing. You know, he's running for Congress. He's getting his voice out. The reason we have him on here tonight is we want to give him a different avenue. I love spaces and throughout this whole thing, Jake. You know, I'm looking for the 100 button, the fist bump button, and the I can't do that here, right? But this is another avenue, you know, where we can get this message out, which is a very positive message, right? And Jake, I didn't want to step on you there, but I just wanted to kind of interject that and get your thoughts on it.
No, dude, I totally agree, and I'm kind of looking for the 100% button myself. It's really funny you're saying all this stuff, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm used to hitting 100% when you're saying this stuff I agree with. Now, when we talk about Civil War or, like, World War III or something like that, I think that we need to remind ourselves of something. There was a quote in the James Bond books, once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, thrice is enemy action. And I do believe the homeland is under attack and that this is, in fact, war. And it's actually being fought on multiple different levels. We have information warfare, psychological warfare, misinformation, disinformation, the propaganda machines, the psyops. We have biological war. We have COVID and the COVID-1984 vaccine. We have the mRNA bioweapon injections that are being pushed as a vaccine. We have the cyber war, where we have the spy balloon, or we have the 25,000 cyber attacks on our infrastructure a day coming from communist China. We have the chemical war, the train derailments, the chemical plant explosions, the fentanyl coming over our borders. We have the terrestrial war. We're talking terrorism, illegal immigration. We're talking about Ukraine and Israel, etc. That is terrestrial. Extraterrestrial, we're talking about space. We're talking about satellites, directed energy weapons and stuff. We're talking about the seas. We've got Nord Stream 2. We've got the war over our fresh water supplies and our infrastructure. We've got the currency war, the banks failing, the central bank digital currency, inflation, BRICS. We've got the legal war, the lawfare, the corrupt courts, the weaponized DOJ. We've got the food supply, the baby formula shortage, the GMOs, the pesticides. We've got the DUMs, the deep underground military bases, classified technology. We've got HARP. We've got DARPA, et cetera. The list goes on and on and on. What we have to recognize is that, in a way, we're already kind of in World War III. It's just not fought with thermonuclear arsenals the way that we've always been told that it would be. However, the advantage to all of that is this. In martial arts, The reason why they call it martial arts and self-defense is because whenever your attacker tries to attack you, they leave certain portions of their body vulnerable to counterattack. And it is an art to exploit these vulnerabilities and use these attackers' attacks against them. One of my favorite forms of martial arts is judo, where you use the enemy's momentum against them to throw them off balance. So if we're under attack right now, if we're being attacked right now by these globalist less than 1%ers, and we see all of the areas in which we are being attacked at, then we are being attacked from, then we can begin to exploit the vulnerabilities that the less than 1%ers have exposed in these attacks to our advantage. We can use their momentum against them, throw them off balance, and create a new system where they don't have monopolies over all of these industries, where they don't have the ability to declare war on the people through these covert means of warfare.
Absolutely. And I practice three martial arts, and specifically for what their strengths are, right? Aikido, because that's exploiting the weakness of the joints, right, against, you know, for hand-to-hand combat when you get close. Judo, which is, you know, as you said, it's taking their momentum and using it against them, and also, you know, being able to get away from an attack, you know, in an efficient manner so that you can then prepare yourself to take on the attack. And then Taekwondo, which is more, it's using your feet, right, and limbs to be able to defend yourself by, you know, offending. I want to throw off the number, Jake, to get more people in. I want to thank our last caller. But you can call in if you're listening and you want to ask Jake a question, and we have 29 minutes left. Like any good discussion, the time just flies. It's a two-hour call show. But the number is 319-527-6092, and once you're connected and you get the message, you can hit 1 to go into the host queue, and we'll pull you up on stage. I wonder if you agree with me on this, Jake, that, you know, just like everything else that's going on in the environment today, you know, we've got the I call it the two-pronged claw, right? We've got the propaganda arm. I love your term, you know, the mockingbird media, and that's exactly what it is. They're all reading from a script and saying the same thing, and it's dictated to them, right? Mockingbird media, they're pushing out this propaganda. You've got big tech and the FBI and DOJ and CIA and everybody's involvement in censoring, you know, conservative or any view that they disagree with, right? So what the, you know, the masses get in message and communication is literally, you know, 1% of the truth, if anything, right? And that's what I believe is killing the hope and driving the fear, you know, in people that we can't win against this thing. When in reality, there are, you know, higher forces, and I'm not just talking spiritually, but I believe that, but there are also human forces that are working actively and are fighting for us, and we can get involved and engaged in helping that. That the true message is, you know, we have more power, and I think you said it, we definitely have more power than the 1%ers, right? And they're scared to death of that. That's why they're doing all this to us. But if I can just give people hope that don't buy in to this globalized message and PSYOP and indoctrination, and don't lose hope. And you know, I get hope from listening to you, Jake. And one of the things that I love you, man, is your knowledge is, for your age, it is so deep and so wide. I can throw any topic at you, and you know it, and you know the history of it, and you can take us through it very concisely and put it in a form that's easily understood. And that's really why I wanted to get you out here. But what do you think about that? Again, I just want to give people hope. But the fact that our message is squelched.
Well, I'll say this. Number one, thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. I'm doing my best. I think we need more people like myself in this generation and generations to come in order to win the seventh generation warfare. Flynn calls it fifth generation. I call it seventh. But regardless, another thing I'd like you to consider is that one of the main points of psychological warfare is to convince your enemy's population, your enemy's troops, that resistance is futile, that the war is over, that they've already lost, and they might as well just give up. That is one of the main points of psychological warfare. So if that is the message that they are pushing so heavily, and if they are so afraid that they are censoring everything that we are trying to do to, you know, take back our country or to ensure humanity's survival, then they are well aware that that is not the case. They are very well aware that we are actually winning this war for our minds and for our souls. So don't get disparaged. Don't get despondent. Don't get discouraged. Because the fact of the matter is, you're right. We are being aided by not just higher spiritual forces, but also entities and people within the what people would call the deep state. There is a war going on at the highest levels of security clearances in our government and around the world, where we are fighting against something that is spiritual and interdimensional, and therefore it is also physical. So as individuals, what we have to recognize is where our real power lies. Our real power is in a couple of things. Number one, where we are directing our time and our attention. Time and attention is the currency of the universe. And part of the reason why advertisers seek to exploit platforms like X or Facebook or Mockingbird media outlets is because people are paying attention to those platforms. So all of these advertisements are actually people attempting to buy our attention. So if we're directing our attention to and our time to these platforms, then we have to ask ourselves why. On X, we are doing so because we believe that it is a free speech platform. If you're directing your attention to CNN or Fox News, you have to ask yourself why. All they've done is lie to you. And as less and less attention is garnered by these corporate institutions, then their bottom line is going to shrink, and their advertisers are going to just be dumping a bunch of money into a money pit that's not getting them anywhere. Another area that they have power is your money. You vote with your money every day. Look at what happened to Bud Light. Look at what happened to Disney Plus. Look at what happened to Target. Okay, these people's bottom lines were hit very, very hard when people stopped spending their money, stopped voting with their money for these corporations. Now, why people are still voting for Monsanto and all of their subsidiary corporations, in spite of the fact that they're literally lacing their food with poison, that their food is laced with glyphosate, and that it has it's made up of genetically modified organisms, why they're voting for a corporation like Monsanto that is creating ecocide and disease all over the planet, I think is only because of manufactured ignorance. So you can easily go online and type into a search engine, Monsanto subsidiaries, click on images, and then you can find all of the subsidiary companies that Monsanto is using to push their GMOs and their glyphosate, and you can take that with you to the store, and you can stop buying Monsanto products, which Monsanto has literally been banned and illegalized in several countries all over the United States. The only reason why they haven't had that happen here is because they own people in Congress, and Congress has given them liability shields so that they aren't going to be sued for the damage that their products cause humanity. Another area of power. But yeah, again, and that's why I want to stop lobbying.
I'm a firm believer with you on that. It needs to be just outlawed, period.
Well,
lobbying should
I
not
think
be
that through our apathy, through our lack of money, there's no real need to outlaw it per se. What needs to happen is that they need to be held accountable for what it is that they've done, and in the process, they will fall away. Now, another area of power that we have is prayer and meditation, okay? Part of the reason why the Mockingbird media sells outrage and why it is that the most divisive topics are brought to the forefront on social media is because energy follows our attention. If we're focused on things that bring us outrage and low frequencies of fear in our hearts and our minds, if we're focused on stimuli that is divisive, then we are not at peace internally. And it's very, very difficult to make money off of somebody who is at peace internally. It's very difficult to make somebody get outraged if they're at peace and have found peace internally. So when you find peace inside, it is reflected on the outside everywhere around you. You become a force for peace. And in the process, the apparatuses which are used to create war, which are used to create division and chaos and outrage, those apparatuses become powerless. And we are only going to win this war for our minds and our souls, one mind and one soul at a time. So I think that people really need to start behaving as though everything that they think, everything that they say, everything that they do matters exponentially. And it's kind of like what Russell Crowe's character Maximus said in Gladiator, what we do in this life echoes in eternity. Are you proud of the echo that are you proud of the echo you're creating in eternity? Are you a force for peace or are you a force for fear? Are you a force for chaos or are you a force for love? And where are you directing your attention? Where are you directing your money? And what apparatus, economic, political, social, what apparatus are you voting for?
Absolutely. We have another caller from Massachusetts, and I think this is our friend Julie, but let her introduce herself and talk with Jake.
You're on the
air.
Well,
good evening, everybody. I've been enjoying this conversation, and Jake, I'm calling you from Massachusetts. I've been a caller in the past, and I really enjoy this show. I wanted to say a few things. One, I appreciate your courage. I appreciate the depth of your analysis, and I appreciate that at base what you're saying, that there is hope and we all have agency to create change. When I think about the coverage of you during the J6 theater, it's outrageous when I compare what they wanted people to believe of you relative to what is very obviously true. And you said something a little while ago about resistance being futile is one of the most kind of effective and fundamental propaganda messages. And it makes me think a lot of the J6 defendants who are still incarcerated, whose constitutional rights are still being trampled. And it seems like there's no resistance to that. And I wonder what you think we can do to support those people and to undermine this really insidious message that debate isn't tolerable and people don't have the right to peacefully protest, which is a constitutional right.
Well, I'll start by saying one of the things that you can do for these people is write them letters. Write them letters of encouragement. Write them letters letting people know that they are seen, that their plight is not being ignored, that they have support. That would be one avenue, because then that's helping them raise their morale. And I'll tell you right now, were it not for some of the letters that I got in solitary and when I was in prison, I don't know how far I would have made it. So I would say that's one avenue that anyone and everyone listening can do. There's something called the Patriot Mail Project that you can get involved in, where they have the addresses for these people that are incarcerated, what jails that they're at, what their prisoner ID number is, and stuff like that. I would say go and check that out if you want to write some letters. I would also say that, unfortunately, because of where these trials or because of where these court hearings are being held in D.C., We're probably not going to see the kind of real exercising of the justice system that we could see in other areas of the country. I think it was actually one of the prosecutors for Enrique Tarrio that was basically telling him in a private conversation behind the scenes before trial that if they were doing this case anywhere else in the country, it would be laughed out of court. But because it's been done in D.C., you know, there's real reason for these people to be afraid of getting 20 years.
Absolutely.
You know, Sun Tzu, Art of War, never fight a battle you know you cannot win. Okay? I knew when I was sitting in a cell in Alexandria, Virginia, that I was not going to be able to win this battle. That if I chose to go to trial, and my judge said as much in my sentencing, that if I went to trial, I was looking at 20 years behind bars. So,
that's very coercive.
It's definitely not fair. They're throwing a bunch of charges at people, and they're weighing on them with all the full weight and the resources of the government. And then they're saying to them, well, you better plead out, otherwise we're going to throw the book at you. You know, it's not fair at all. But this is what's interesting about that, is that people on the left side of the political spectrum have been screaming for decades about the inadequacies of the justice system and the reform that is needed in the prison system. And the people on the right have laughed at them and told them these people are criminals. They don't deserve, they deserve less, basically. And now that same apparatus has been turned on conservatives, they're starting to see that what some of these people on the left side of the spectrum have been saying for decades is true. I think this is a real unifying moment for the left and the right to look at the machine that we're dealing with that literally is a soulless machine that eats people alive. That machine must be changed. It must be stopped. How can we do it, though? That is the real question. And
so legally, it would seem to me that in some of these cases where the FBI, who were present that day and then later used as material witnesses, you know, there's a linchpin here, right? If it's not an insurrection, it changes the legal dynamic profoundly. And I wonder, in the future, will some of these cases effectively be appealed so that there is some judicial oversight to the profound bias you see, not only local to D.C., but also the mockingbird media, as you coined them so well. I mean, I feel to me like the story is not over.
To answer your question, currently, I believe it's Fisher versus the United States is going to be held or heard by the U.S. Supreme Court regarding the 1512 charge, which is the obstruction of an official proceeding charge, and whether or not that is applicable. So, unfortunately, we are going to have to move at the speed of the courts in some of these cases. Now, whether or not the Supreme Court is going to have the cojones to do what's right, some cases they have, I think, done the right thing. But in other cases, I was flabbergasted at the rulings that they came up with. And this speaks to this notion of you don't have to corrupt the whole system of checks and balances in order to corrupt the government. You just have to corrupt the checks and balances systems of the system in order to corrupt the whole government and centralized power. So, right. So whether or not the Supreme Court is compromised, I do not know. I would like to have enough faith in the American system and the institutions to believe that not the whole system is corrupted. We shall see where this goes. Another thing that people can do, and I know that this may kind of rub some people the wrong way, but I have to say it because I think that it's a bad strategy. When we say things like everybody in the J6 committee is guilty of treason and should rot in a prison cell, that right there is so extreme and divisive. And it's so a dog whistle for the people on the left to say, oh, these people are extremists, that the message itself about the malfeasance that took place with the J6 committee is overlooked. So we also, in this idea of all J6 prisoners need to get released, in all honesty, I do not believe that, because there were very real crimes that took place. I don't believe in assaulting police officers. I don't believe in the destruction of property. And if you assaulted a police officer, if you destroyed property, then guess what? I don't care if you're BLM, Antifa, or MAGA. You should see some sort of justice. You need to have some consequences for that behavior. However,
the crime,
that doesn't
time.
Mean that the right, but that doesn't mean that we should be allowing these massive sentences to be leveled
exactly.
at these individuals for these somewhat menial crimes that people for BLM or Antifa would see a micro sentence compared to the sentences that are being handed out. And like
absolutely.
I said earlier, when I was talking about J6 and the way that the prosecution, the DOJ, went to Enrique Tarrio and said, sign this plea agreement and agree that you had connections through a third party to Donald Trump and you'll get out of jail in a couple of months, just testify in open court. That right there is very, very suspect, because how many other deals like that were made, not just in the J6 cases, but in other cases in the past that have gotten people 20 and 30 year sentences, where the DOJ is asking people to lie so that they can get another notch on their belt. So
absolutely.
These are the things that we should be talking about. These are the things that will move the ball down the field. We have to differentiate between people that are being prosecuted for misdemeanors and having their lives ruined and their careers destroyed, people that are being followed around on airplanes or having their phone calls tapped because they were walking on Capitol grounds or because they walked into a building for 2 seconds and then walked out. But then we also have to distinguish those individuals from the individuals that did things like assault police officers or destroy government property or were planning on kidnapping people with zip ties and stuff like that. Now, whether or not those were federal agents or not, I can't say. I don't know 100%. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them were. But also the release of the J6 tapes. We need to put pressure on Mike Johnson through social media posts, through public inquiry, whether it be calls to his office or what have you, whatever means that you think that are nonviolent that would help people to understand in the Congress, we want those J6 tapes released like Mike Johnson said he would. I think the release of all of the J6 tapes would actually vindicate a lot of these people that had federal agents lie at their trial, and that
Me
will
too.
End up getting these people out of jail.
I think that that's exactly right, and I just have to say one thing. In terms of the J6 hearing that was billed to be something like a trial but resembled nothing like that, it was like one long opening statement by a very partial group, I think that some of these people have done something that's tantamount to fraud. I think that they spent considerable public resources to put on propaganda. And I do think that there should be some accountability and liability for that. I think that the deceptions have to be taken on.
Well, just let you know, I do too. Just let you know, I do too. But that isn't treason.
Well, right. And I'm
That's
not
fraud.
Saying it is.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Well, I know,
absolutely.
But
absolutely.
Say that it's treason, then that just totally delegitimizes your argument of the malfeasance that took place. That's all I'm saying.
No, I agree with you, and anything that's cast into extremes is typically not representative of the truth. 100% agree with you. But I do think that there's a place for accountability, and I think that that comes along with, as you said, full transparency. People should see exactly what happened, and I couldn't agree with you more. People who did harm, real harm, should be held accountable, and I would say that Michael Byrd is one of them. I think that there were bad actors on both sides. I think there are bad actors in any large group. But I think the majority of people who are being held accountable are essentially pawns. And I resent that because it undermines the credibility of our justice system, not just the duplicitous sentences. You know, for some people it's a misdemeanor. For other people now we're going to jack it up using a domestic terrorist linchpin to 20 years. I mean, this is absolutely about the idea that resistance is futile.
Yep. Hey, guys, I need to interrupt just a second. We've got 6 minutes left, and this is radio, so there's a program coming on after. It's a hard stop whether we like it or not. I want to take some time, one, to definitely thank you, Jake, for being on. Thank you, Julie, for joining. But I want to give some plugs out here. First of all, I posted on one of our ads for this show, Jake, I posted your campaign website. I'll get that out to people and share it widely. If you're not following Jake on X, he's America Shaman, and I strongly encourage you to follow him. Julie, I'm very proud to say I brought Julie into our program, and she hosts her own show. Julie, that's Wednesday nights, right?
Yep, Eva and I do Common Sense for Dummies. Yes.
Absolutely. It's a great show. I want people to listen to it. Brian and I are following your lead, Jake, and we are starting to be space hosts and co-hosts. We have a program tomorrow night. It's actually hosted by Sassafras. She's a great account, and if you're not following her, you should. But I put some advertisements out there, and I'm bringing my good friend Pablo Escobar Jr. I love bridging gaps between groups that would probably never talk to each other, but Pablo has a powerful conversion in life story that he's going to share tomorrow at 7 p.m. on Spaces, so look for that ad. And actually Wednesday night, I'm hosting an interview of Dr. Rechtenwald, who is a libertarian presidential candidate. So that space is going to be 9 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. And we're going to have more, and we're going to invite you guys to those things. And Jake has his own. I don't know if your spaces are regularly scheduled each week, Jake, or do you do them as you feel? But I want you to be able to plug your spaces as well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I really do. And thank you for plugging the Shaman for Congress website. I would also say if people like the spiritual, socioeconomic, and geopolitical opinions that they have heard here, you can also go to my website, ForbiddenTruthAcademy.com. That is ForbiddenTruthAcademy.com. And we have all sorts of free courses, free podcasts, free interviews. At this point, dozens of hours of content that you can intellectually digest. We also have some awesome merchandise, and we have my book for sale, One Mind at a Time, A Deep State of Illusion by Jacob Angeli. You can find that on my website as well. We're trying as hard as we can to not be what everybody else is being and doing what everybody else is doing. So, yes, my spaces are not regularly scheduled, but I am doing them regularly. The whole thing about predator and prey is that if you have a pattern of behavior that is repetitious, then you're more likely to become prey, and predators study prey. So I try not to do things regularly. I try to keep, the predators guessing so I don't turn into prey.
Now,
spiritual predator.
I look at it like from the view of the anglerfish. I lure my prey in.
Oh, there you go. I get it. I dig it. No, I'm just saying that, that's part of why I do what I do. I try to learn from nature as much as I can. And
oh, for sure.
So I'm as a shamanic practitioner, I try to do what has worked for thousands of years in nature.
Smart.
Like a roll.
Smart.
We are down to our last two minutes, 21 seconds of our show. I would like to thank Jake immensely for joining us this evening. Happy New Year, brother. God bless you.
Happy New Year to you, and God bless you and your entire audience. Thank you so much for your time and your attention.
Yeah, this has been a great
pleasure.
Show. I really... Yep. And Julie, thank you for joining in.
It's been my pleasure, and Jake, it's been wonderful to hear from you. I appreciate your courage, and I respect you a lot. And Brian, Bill, it's always a pleasure. Love hearing your insights, and appreciate your allowing me to join you.
Young lady, it's always an honor to have you on our show. You're one of the most intelligent women I've ever met.
Oh, Brian, you're a flatterer. Your
even
mama taught you well.
even though you're a lawyer.
Well, some say a lawyer is synonymous with liar, but not always, my friend.
No. You've changed my mind on that.
I'm glad that I've had the chance, and I'm also always very glad to get to talk with you guys. Wonderful insights, and I loved the depth of tonight's conversation. I loved that Jake pulled it from sort of the political to a spiritual place and a hopeful place, and I think it was a very important message.
I think we need more of a spiritual message in this country.
Yeah. More love.
Amen to that, young lady.
Amen.
I would like to say goodnight to everybody out there that listened and joined in. And have a very, very happy new year. Good night and God bless. And remember, America matters.
Good night.